Following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Okay, welcome back to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you could join in with us today. And before we get started, I just want to remind you that just because we discuss certain topics that may be of interest and you think you understand a certain strategy, or maybe are interested in, if you hadn't already started investing in real estate private partnerships, maybe in our discussion today, we may mention certain features or types of projects that are out there right now. And please check with your existing advisors first before you dive in. And let's make sure that you understood correctly what you thought, what you heard meant. And let's see, for those of you that don't have advisors currently that understand or are willing to consult with you on real estate taxation, where it intersects with retirement plan investing, where you're using your 401 or IRA to invest in private partnerships involving real estate, or maybe you're striving to get to the zero tax rate by the time you get to retirement. And I know some of you are thinking, well, yeah, that'd be nice, but surely there's no way I can do that. And I'll just tell you, there is a way. It's not by working for a W-2 or even having a significant amount of self-employment income, but the more real estate income that we can generate, and I say income, I mean cash flow, there's a difference, is there not, between taxable income and cash flow. And that's one of the things that we like about real estate. It tends to generate cash flow well in advance of any taxable gains or rental income, and so we have the ability to defer and defer and defer those gains by either investing in another project. We try to time it in the same year so that we get the benefit of those write-offs. And it does appear that the bonus depreciation that we've enjoyed a lot over the last 5, 6, 7 years is going to be renewed, although there is some static right now. I just read an article earlier today about the Senate is not on board. This would be the GOP in the Senate. The Republicans are not on board with some of the tax cuts and the spending that's been proposed by the House. The Republicans in the House have come up with Mr. Trump's one big beautiful bill, and the House voted Wednesday of this week to advance some of the most contentious parts of the major budget package aimed at addressing the president's agenda. But the Senate's already warned them, you know, don't bring that here, because you're not going to be able to pass it in the current form. And the biggest division is on some of the most major components, including Medicaid and, like I mentioned, certain tax cuts. The SALT tax, you know, the state and local tax deduction is one of the big issues. And, of course, the Medicaid is so material. The Medicare and Medicaid combined are our largest budget component in the annual spending that we do as a nation. I mean, it exceeds the Social Security expenditure. It exceeds interest expense. Interest expense is now the third largest item after Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, and over $1 trillion now, which is just insane. And then defense is the fourth. Interest expense actually passed defense this past year. And I don't know, it would seem kind of commonsensical that that's got to pose some type of security risk to us as a nation if we're spending more on paying our interest on borrowed money. And in some cases, it's to some of our largest enemies, China being one. China holds quite a bit of our debt, and as a result, they're a big recipient of the interest payments that we make. But in any event, so for those of you that don't have advisors, I'm going to meander back to where I was a few minutes ago. You can go to our website at baplanner.com, and top right, you'll see, second link from the right, you'll see forms. And if you'll go to the first form on that page that you click there to get to the forms page, step one, form one's a client profile. If you would be kind enough to complete that, then I'll have enough information where we could then have a phone call, which you can schedule by clicking the rightmost link. I think it just says calls. Not on our site right now, but in any event, I'll be happy to spend some time with you on understanding your current facts and circumstances, and then we can help you understand how we might proceed with working with you to help you achieve those goals and objectives. And of course, getting to retirement with enough money is what most people call me about. And unfortunately, or fortunately as the case may be, most 50 to 60 year olds that are barreling down the tracks to retirement realize they don't have enough money to live through retirement, meaning that their money is going to run out before their living does. And that's going to be a bad outcome. And real estate, especially multifamily real estate, is one of the few types of assets that's capable of getting you caught up to be in a better position for retirement. And if you don't understand that, we can help you by looking at your current numbers and along with what you think it's going to take to make it through retirement. Anyway, if you'll fill those forms out, or at least the first one, and schedule a call, I'll be happy to chat with you for a bit. I want to talk about, we're going to take a break here in a minute before I really get started, but I want to talk about a few concepts involving the operational characteristics of the real estate private partnership syndications. And, you know, it's having been a member of more than a couple of those platforms over the years, I can tell you that there's a lot of, most people, in fact, I won't say a lot, I'll say most new members don't understand how partnerships work. And even, I guess I could say most members of those platforms truly don't, including the lead partners, which is really a shame because they're the ones that of all the people involved need to understand how they function, and yet I don't see many, and I've worked with a lot of lead partners over the 20-plus years I've been consulting in this area, and it's scary to think how little knowledge when it comes to operationally what how an LLC works, which that's how most of these assets are held. And the topic I'm going to talk about is something that will cost you a lot of money if you don't understand and avoid the type of structure that we'll go through here in a moment and discuss. So let's go ahead and take our first break, and we'll circle back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. But I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control and make it.
Okay, welcome back to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And before we took our first break, I had mentioned that I want to talk about a concept that I see, unfortunately, I see it more and more frequently the way that these real estate private partnerships are structured. And I guess I just want to try to get it into your radar, so to speak, so that you're not caught unawares. But what I'm referring to, and I guess unless you understand how partnership works or partnerships work, this is going to be a topic that you'll probably struggle with, but, you know, hey, we can address it on a phone call, perhaps, if any of you decide to work with me. I'm happy to do that. In any event, the concept of distributions and how they're treated with respect to what counts, if I put it in stock market lingo, what counts as a dividend versus you're being given your money back in exchange for conveying your shares. It could be done in a number of ways. You could sell it into the open market on the stock exchanges, or you could be part of some sort of corporate reorganization or stock buyback. There's a number of ways that could happen. But if you don't understand in a partnership setting how it works, you're going to get to the end of that partnership, and depending on whether it's been treated, the distributions that you've gotten consist of a return on your capital versus a return of your capital. There's quite a big difference in the outcome when ultimately you dispose of, or you collectively as the partner group decide to dispose of the property. So you sell the property. And I'm telling you, I've seen lead partner after lead partner that doesn't understand the documents they get back from a syndication lawyer. And syndication lawyers, unfortunately, many of them don't really understand. They've never purchased a syndication interest, I'm betting. I know for a fact some of them haven't. So they're drafting documents using assorted boilerplate. I mean, I know. I purchase an ongoing subscription to a Texas LLC service that has all the different templates and suggested verbiage for different types of LLC agreements that accomplish, you know, multiple outcomes. And again, I do it to understand the tax implications. If you're a lawyer, you're probably not doing, and you're probably not caring as much about the tax implications or what's the legal language that I need to put in the LLCs. And they're probably staying very close to the line. If there was a line that indicated vanilla versus Neapolitan, they're staying real close to that vanilla line. And there's a couple decision points along that way or that journey. And for whatever reason, I sure see, and it may be planned. I don't know. Maybe it's intentional. If it is, well, shame on them. But I've seen the return of your capital. It's becoming increasingly common in some of these partnerships. And if you think, well, you know, it's not that big a deal, and maybe you've even asked the lead partner, and there's not a lot of lead partners that understand how egregious that is. In other words, they've taken something the attorney's drafted for them, and they're thinking, well, this is what everybody else does. Well, there are a lot of other people that do it, but you can run the numbers, which I've done many times to show people how much more money you would have gotten if the distributions throughout the life of that partnership up until the very end, once you exit and you liquidate, you've got liquidating distributions. If you've gotten a lot of interim distributions from cash flow, you're going to get much less money than when you get to the end. In other words, in many partnerships, you would expect to get your original capital back and then some measure of profit on the exit where you dispose of the property. And yet what I'm trying to tell you is in most cases where you've gotten distributions that are treated as a return of your capital, then your distributions at the end will be much less because the lead partner, the way most of these agreements are structured, ends up getting a much higher number because they consider the point that you got your original capital back or an amounts that equal what you originally had invested, they consider that to, in many cases, to be the milestone where their sharing ratio will go up. And as an example, you may be in a transaction that ostensibly starts off as an 80-20 split on certain cash flows that are of an interim nature. It's what's left over each month or each quarter or maybe once a year from the gross rents that have been collected, less expenses. And so then there's usually a priority of who gets paid first. You hope it's the passive partner group, of which you're likely a member. In most cases it is. It's just it's coming after assorted fees have been paid to the syndicator. In most cases, there are a few that prioritize the passive return over their own, and that's what you're looking for, obviously. But if you are getting distributions throughout the life, and you can tell, you can look at the K-1. The K-1 has everything you need to know about how those are being treated. I mean, the operating agreement obviously is where you'll confirm it, but you can tell if you know how to read a K-1, which again, most passives don't. You can see what your capital account balance starts at, and you can see where it ends up each year. And then there are some twists and turns along the way that you would have to understand. But again, I would tell you to ask the question before you invest your money of the lead partner as to, when I receive distributions in an interim context. In other words, we're not at the end. We didn't just sell the property. We understand that's going to be treated as a return of our capital because there's no more assets once you've done that. And you hope you get your capital back. As of late, there's been quite a few partnerships that have not been able to do that because the impact of, I don't know, it's been a very difficult time. I mean, if the interest rate increases didn't affect your partnership, well, the insurance costs that have tripled or quadrupled over the last 4 years, 3 years, the property taxes that have gone way up, the significant number of new units that have come into many of the major markets, all of that has been just an incredible blender, if you will, of challenges for the partnerships in this arena, you know, multifamily. And yet there's still opportunity. This year has yet to see the really significant number of foreclosures that have been predicted now for a while. And I've even seen banks and lenders say, we're not kicking the can down the road any further. We're going to start taking the properties back. So that's happening. I don't think it's happened to the extent that many of those in this industry have predicted, but it's coming. And I don't know that, I mean, I understand the economy is looking much better than certainly any of the media gave Mr. Trump credit for. Not that long ago, they were all saying this is insane, these tariffs aren't going to work, or this and that, you know, and yet we turn around and everything from the price of eggs to the price of gas has dropped in the face of much criticism by the opposition saying that it just can't happen. But as many other things that Mr. Trump has projected or predicted, looks like he's right on track. I noticed the report earlier this week on inflation. The rate of increase hasn't been as low as it is now in 5 years, which I guess puts you into his last tail end of the last administration. But anyway, I do have a concern about this bill that's working its way through Congress. I was just looking through here, skimming to see if they have the same number I've seen referred to before, but I've seen reference to a deficit that goes up by as much as $5 trillion to $15 trillion over the next, I believe, like with everything in Congress, they look at it on a 10-year go forward, and whether it's 1 year or 10 years, it's still an incredibly large increase in the deficit. Now, that analysis doesn't consider the collection of the tariffs. It doesn't consider the fact that we, apparently, from what Mr. Trump has campaigned on, he's looking to monetize significant oil and gas reserves that we currently have. I believe the most, or close to the most in the world, if not the most. And it also doesn't consider monetizing the 14,000 empty office buildings that the government owns. And so Trump understands these assets, you know, number one, they've got holding costs, so you're going to free up some cash flow that away. You look at the work that Doge has undertaken and will continue to undertake, that's going to create additional cash flow if we're not spending as much. So I don't know. I think that the budget, unfortunately, you know, it's hard to predict exactly the impact of these items I just mentioned, but they're not going to be zero, and yet they may not be $1 trillion, which I think is or was Doge's original target. I think it was even $2 trillion at one time, but maybe that was over the first 2 or 3 years. But whatever it is, it needs to happen because there's just such a significant waste with our government spending. And if you don't understand the critical times we're in, take a look at the usdebtclock.org site. It's been a while since I've looked at it, and I just called it up to see what I've been missing. Let's see. The deficit currently is now up to $36,857,000,000,000. So it's gone up quite a bit from the last time that I logged in to check it. And they've added some nice features that show the work. I think it's got a Doge estimate on here. It seems like the Doge clock has been added to the debt clock. And they show $437,675,000,000 as being the total, I guess, waste, fraud, and abuse that's been discovered. But it works out to not quite $4,000 per taxpayer in savings, assuming they follow through. The other stat that they've added not too long ago, just reminded me, is what percentage of our nation's total GDP, debt to GDP ratio, which is how a lot of people, especially Congress folks, have looked at whether we really have a problem over the years. And I don't think you can find too many of them that will say we don't now. You know, if you backed up to back in the 60s or 1960, we were about 52%, dropped down in the 80s to 35 or 34.5, and started working its way back up. Now we're over the 100% mark. We're at 123% roughly, and that's tough. That's a big number to work down. And yet, you know, a lot of congresswomen think that the U.S. can essentially print money without any impact. And I just don't believe that's the case. I think that we're in a position that others would envy But I wouldn't say it's guaranteed that we can do that forever. And, you know, God help us if we can't sell our T-bills that we now we must borrow. It's not optional. And if we get into a major war, it truly is a security risk in terms of us being able to cover all the expenditures. Let's do this. We're going to come back to the debt clock. There's a couple of other numbers that are tracked here that I just wanted to touch base on. And then we'll pivot at that point to some other in the news things that are very recent. So let's go ahead and take that break, and we'll circle back here momentarily with the last segment of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Like the song, Bobby McGee. I'm just longing to be free. Take me away. I want. Big dreams and fantasies, and there are many just like me
with big dreams and fantasies.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And I want to just take a moment to talk about the annual deficit that we have. You know, we mentioned the cumulative national debt is $36,857,000,000 plus. Do you have any idea what our annual tax revenue is? I know we've talked about it on the air. Unfortunately, it doesn't go up nearly as fast as the debt and the interest on the debt. And in fact, let me see, what is the debt clock showing our annual interest to be this year? Let's see, here it is, $1,024,000,000 And that's a real-time number. And I'm pretty sure it's accrued. So otherwise, we wouldn't be over the trillion mark here in May. The U.S., by the way, the government has a fiscal year and operates on a fiscal year's budget that ends in September. So I don't think they're showing $1.024 trillion. I think that's, again, got some accruals in there to get us to that point this early. Well, I say this early in the year. I guess we're 9 months or more, so maybe that is the real number. Anyway, our total tax revenues are $5.126 billion, and our spending is somewhere north of $7 trillion. I don't see that number. I know it's on here, but this is like looking at a pinball machine with all the real-time numbers flashing by. But I can tell you that the four largest components, I mentioned it earlier, is Medicare, Medicaid. That's $680 billion. Social Security is $1.5 trillion. Defense is $900 billion. And again, interest on the debt is just over $1.024 trillion. So anyway, we're clocking along at $2 trillion a year in additional debt, and that's going to go up. If we get everything in this bill that Congress is kicking back and forth, we're going to be adding at least $2 trillion more dollars to the annual deficit for a while. And again, that doesn't count all the good stuff that could happen. And you know, Mr. Trump has been right a lot on projecting the economic side of things. But I tell you, it's kind of scary. And if you think about this on a per taxpayer, you and I, and obviously that's not how real life works. We don't each get a knock on the door wanting us to pay our share. But if that were to happen, the debt per taxpayer currently is $323,050. Think about that. The number of the debt per citizen. So debt per taxpayer obviously is just for those that file a tax return, or I suppose maybe even actually pay tax, but it would be income tax. It wouldn't be Social Security and Medicare, even though for lower income people, the Social Security and Medicare tax exceeds in some cases by a lot the income tax that they pay. But the debt per citizen is $107,654. Some big, big numbers. But and so what do we do? And this we come back to this every time we take a look at this debt clock. I can tell you what I've done and what a lot of my clients have done is we've converted our retirement funds from pre-tax status, where you don't know how much of a percentage your silent partner, that would be the government. You know, and I've said this many times on the air, when I ask people, well, how much do you have in your retirement accounts? And they come back, especially the folks that are true savers and have what they're thinking is a lot, and come back and say, well, you know, I've got a couple million dollars. And I say, yeah, and how much of that's yours? And they always look at me a little funny, and you say, well, all of it's mine. I said, no, it's not. I didn't hear you say you had any of that in a Roth. You've got it in pre-tax accounts. And the way we're headed right now, you're going to be lucky to have half of that when you get to the age that you have to take your required minimum distributions, or you just want to start taking distributions. And so now tell me how much you've got, and do you think that's enough to live to the ripe old age of 86 or 85 to 86 if you're a male, or 87 to 88 if you're a female? Because that's the life expectancy. Even the IRS tables show those numbers. And that puts things in a little different light when you just realize you're giving away half of your retirement accounts at some point. And again, the way to avoid that is to give away a lot less, and I mean a lot less, today, and then have your retirement distributions become tax-free for the rest of your life. And that's the way to beat the deficit conundrum that we've worked our way into. And frankly, I was explaining this today to somebody. I can't remember who it was. And anyway, they said, well, isn't that just a number? We don't really plan on paying that back, do we? And how do you answer that? I mean, I don't know. I think the countries we owe it to and the U.S. citizenry have invested in T-bills, private equity, etc. I think they do expect to get paid back. I hadn't heard anybody raise their hand and say, hey, don't worry about me. Even the wealthy that talk about, like, say, a Warren Buffett type that thinks we don't pay enough taxes, well, I don't see him volunteering to pay more than his, quote, fair share, whatever that is. He could do that, and he could say, well, you know, I don't need my retirement distributions. You know, I'll just donate those to the government, you know, to pay interest on the debt. You know, it's just, you know, everybody thinks it's the other guy that's going to pay on the debt. And I don't know. I mean, you think about this, if you realize how long it took us to get to these numbers, it'll take at least that long going back the other way and paying it down, unless some new paradigm were to take effect. And I'm not saying it couldn't. I mean, let's face it, the U.S. entrepreneur and the U.S. Longevity or business longevity is such that, again, if we monetize some of the significant assets we have that are not currently bringing us money in fact, it's taking money out, you know, the holding costs that we have to pay on some of these assets, you know, it would be difficult. But is it possible? Sure, it's possible. And it'll be interesting to see. But again, I'm going to mention the Roth conversion as your solution. And it's better if you're also invested in these real estate private partnerships. It's one of the least expensive asset type you can hold when you do your conversion to minimize the amount of tax. You know, I mentioned a minute ago, that's how you tell how much of a partner the government is. And so the way this works is when you decide to convert all or part of your retirement assets, you don't have to do them all at one time or ever. It's just how much do you want to save? Or your heirs, how much would they like to save? Not that it's really their decision, but if you want to pass some tax-free money on your heirs, the Roth conversion is also the solution. If you don't want to pay Social Security or tax on your Social Security money, or pay the IRMA premium on your Medicare, well, the Roth conversion is for you. And that's not the only consideration, but that's where you know, most people get hit with bigger required minimum distributions, or RMDs, than they think they're going to have. And so that's what causes their Social Security to get taxed, and in large measure, the IRMA premium. Now, let me mention something else. It's not just the RMD, or it's not just the tax, the Roth conversion tax, that works out well under the current conversion rules. Your annual RMDs are also reflective of the fair market value. Just like the Roth conversion is based on the fair market value of those private company, i.e. the LLCs that you invest in that hold the real estate, well, the RMD is also based on estimated fair market value. And so you get the same private company discounts in calculating those numbers that you do with the Roth conversion. And it's significant. Much, much smaller number than if you were invested in index funds, mutual funds, stocks, etc. And if you don't understand what I mean by that, please connect with us and let me explain to you. Let me show you some numbers on what this translates to for you, because you can look at this one of two ways. You're either lowering your cost or you're gaining more positive amount than you're otherwise going to have. This becomes a way to increase your retirement lifestyle as compared to losing. And again, I'm estimating half. It could be a lot more than half based on what happens in the future with our country, its security, its economy, inflation. I mean, just go down the list and you'll understand why the planets have aligned in terms of real estate private partnership syndications. And if you don't understand that, and if you're behind on your retirement savings, this asset class is something you need to look at. It's about the only thing, aside from winning the lottery. If you got that covered, well, then you don't need to listen to me, certainly. But aside from the lottery, this is the one asset type that normal people, average people, can invest in that generates above average types of returns. It's not guaranteed. It's not assured. There's been a lot of problems lately with some of the partnerships and lead partners that didn't plan well. And again, if you don't understand what you're signing up for, and just as an example, what we started off talking about, return of your equity or return on your equity, big deal. And that's just one example I can point to. There's assorted others. And that's what we do. The clients we work with, we help them understand on this transaction you're looking at, or you may be picking from three or four to find one that works. We're going to help you understand what each of those consist of in terms of what you're agreeing to, what you're signing up for, what the tax impact might be. How do we stay down in those low brackets where maybe, I mean, the Roth gives us cover on our retirement distributions if we get converted over to Roth. But if you've got partnerships that aren't in the Roth, which, understand, we help people invest their money with their Roth converted retirement funds in private partnerships. Okay, that's what allows us to convert at a lower tax basis. And so, but you still got, if you have some partnerships that you had before you invested your retirement funds, well, then those generate gains that are a little bit harder to sidestep. But we can still do it if you are able to reinvest the funds from the sell into a new partnership. Well, then that will continue to defer those gains, or the tax on those gains. Anyway, well, we're at the end of the show. Thank you for tuning in once again. We'll be back Sunday right here on 700 AM KSEV, The Voice of Texas. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.